South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, May 5, 2022. Local authorities in eastern Equatoria State condemn attacks by pastoralists in villages around Nimule town.
Yesterday we went to the crime scene where we got the one of the laborers, the nurse, and I've mentioned the name, lying in the river and in the water.
And some women in West Darfur State say the recent intercommunal violence in the area has affected their mental health.
She says they experienced threat for so long in Krenik even before the incident. They find it difficult to go out for 2 kilometers to fetch water or firewood.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Jonglei State say at least 13 people were killed and several others injured Wednesday in a fresh attack by armed youth suspected to have crossed from neighboring Greater Pibor Administrative Area. The commissioner of Duke County says the group stormed a cattle camp on the outskirts of Duke Padiek and shot people randomly. The Minister of Information in Jonglei State condemned the incident. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Duke County Commissioner John Chatim says a group of armed young men suspected of coming from Greater Pibor Administrative Area attacked a local cattle camp earlier Wednesday and killed men, women and children.
Around 12:30 a.m., the criminals came and attacked the people and took the cattle. We recognized that these criminals came from Greater Pibor Administrative Area. The cattle they took were recovered later in the morning. There are 5 people wounded and 13 dead, including 2 elderly people, an 8-year-old and a 3-month-old baby. And from the attackers, some of them were also killed. 5 were killed during the fighting in the attack, and some were later found dead in the forest. The number is about 14 who died.
Chatim says it is said that authorities in Pibor are unable to prevent the armed youth from attacking neighbors.
We ask the government of Pibor, what exactly have we taken from you, so that we sit and see how to compensate that. But we know that we have not taken anything from Pibor. If they don't want peace, they should be frank and say that we don't want peace. Because if we go after the attackers who are now heading to Pibor, then fighting will then go and include those who are innocent.
Chatim says local authorities will not cross into Pibor to find the killers, but urge the people in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area to, in his words, stop their criminals. Jonglei State Information Minister John Samuel condemned the incident and also called on Greater Pibor authorities to arrest the suspected perpetrators.
What happened in Duke is something very unfortunate, inhuman, and we condemn it in the strongest term possible. In Jonglei, as well, there has been a number of attacks, and these attacks have been carried out by our neighbors from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, where we have the full evidence that these criminals that have been attacking our counties are from Greater Pibor Administrative Area. Regardless of numerous calls for the administration in Greater Pibor to see how best to handle these criminals, all have gone in vain.
Samuel says Jonglei does not have enough security forces to deploy in villages across the state to protect civilians and their property because the Joint Unified Forces are yet to be graduated.
People are in the process of the unification of forces. Currently, you find areas are controlled differently. The area is controlled by the government, areas controlled by the IO, area controlled by any other opposition group. So deployment of forces is a little bit difficult at this time.
The chief administrator of the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, Lokali Amea, says he is aware of the attack on Duke County and he has summoned the commissioners of Gumuruk and Lilkwangule counties over the incident.
I heard that from radio and then I called commissioners. Now commissioner is the Kwangwa of Gumuruk is here with me. So I would really want to find which county is. So I call commissioner of Gumuruk and commissioner of the Kwangwa. I let them go to find out where these people belong to this area. if the people of Likwangule, and then we will deal with the commissioner of Likwangule. If they're from Gumuruk, and then we will deal with the commissioner of Gumuruk.
A mayor offered his condolences to the families of those killed in Duke and insist that his administration is trying its best to crack down on criminals who attacked neighbors. He says his administration launched a peace campaign last week to sensitize young people in order to cease all forms of hostilities, including cattle raid, child abductions, and road ambushes which have crippled the transportation network and blocked humanitarian aid to the area. Ameya says a team of local chiefs, women groups, youth, and church-based organizations have been dispatched to villages and camps to encourage young people to stop attacking the neighbors in Jonglei State. Cattle raids, child abductions, and revenge killings are a common occurrence in Jonglei and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, despite many community-led goodwill agreements signed by both communities in recent years, aimed at ending the waves of deadly violence. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Local authorities in eastern Equatoria State say suspected armed cattle keepers kidnapped 11 men from Gaji area of Mogalipayam. Eastern Equatoria's information minister condemns the attack, adding the state government will continue to seek solutions to resolve the conflict between armed pastoralists and host communities in the state. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Nimule Payam head Chief William Alira tells South Sudan in Focus suspected armed cattle keepers killed at least one man and kidnapped 12 others from the Ganji area of Mogalipayam, but released 9 of the 12 later on Wednesday. He says two men are still missing and presumed dead. Alira says he and other local authorities recover a body last night from the Aswa River, identified as one of the two missing people who were abducted yesterday.
Yesterday we went to the crime scene where we got the one of the deborahs, I've mentioned the name, lying in the river, in the water, river Aswa. So we went together with the police. Still up to now, the investigation need to be done from the people who have been released.
Alira says the bodies of the two other missing men have not been found, but they presumed killed. He says his community has suffered greatly over the last 2 months since armed pastoralists originally from Jungule State moved to Magwe County. Eastern Equatoria Information Minister Patrick Oting condemned the attack and says state authorities are working to bring the culprits to justice.
We condemn that incident. It's not a very good incident, especially when and innocent people who are not even part of the cattle raiding are still being tortured and butchered, you know, by the cattle herders. That is unacceptable in the Republic of South Sudan for such kind of thing to happen. And I would still find a way until we reach the bottom of the situation and even to bring those who are concerned into the books one way or the other.
Oting says state officials are aware of the dire situation displaced Mogalipayam residents are in, who have sought refuge in Anzara village since last week's attack.
As a government, what we have come up with is to send a high delegation committee from the state government to go to the area and to assess the situation and then to come up with recommendations on what needs to be done. And that is what we have actually come up with the issue.
On Wednesday, the paramount chief, John, said armed pastoralists moved into his area about 3 months ago, which is when the violence started. He told South Sudan in Focus displaced villagers need immediate humanitarian assistance, including food, shelter and water. Nearly 900 families were displaced from their homes in Mogalipayam after armed cattle keepers attacked the community. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Some women rights activists in Sudan's West Darfur state say hundreds of women displaced by recent intercommunal fighting in the area are going through depression caused by violence they witnessed. One activist says women who witnessed horrific scenes need psychosocial support. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Women rights activist Rehab Khalil Abdul Malik, deputy head of the Darfur-based Women Association in West Darfur State, says dozens of women displaced by fighting in Karenik locality have developed symptoms of depression and anxiety in recent days. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus from Al Janina town of West Darfur State, Khalil says some women saw their husbands and children killed or homes burned to the ground during the fighting that erupted 2 weeks ago. She says thousands of families have been sheltering in overcrowded conditions at a military barracks in Karenik, where they have limited access to proper sanitation. Khalil says there are pregnant women, women of childbearing age, others who give birth to children, and there are girls. Different categories of such women have special needs during this time. She says they need to get support so that they are able to move on with their lives and with dignity. Intercommunal violence erupted in Karenik on April 24th. At least 196 people were killed during the intercommunal fighting, according to the Central Committee of Sudanese Doctors. Khalil says at least 36 women were killed. 25 others are being treated at Al Janina Hospital for injuries sustained during the attacks. She says women should be protected during fighting in accordance with international law. Khalil says, we all know that women are not party to any conflict, but they still fall victim of such a situation. Women keep on sacrificing their lives in every conflict, war, and in any violence that keeps on repeating. Dr. Adam Zakaria, who performs surgeries at Al Janina Hospital, confirms dozens of women were brought to the hospital during the fighting. Dr. Zakaria says, we operated on 25 individuals with different fractions, including 3 children and 3 elderly women who were also injured with the bullets. Dr. Zakaria says some critically injured patients were airlifted to Khartoum for further medical attention. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan estimates that between 85,000 and 115,000 people were displaced due to the violence. Khalil says displaced women have been traumatized and some were in shock. She says they experienced threat for so long in Karenik even before the incident. They find it difficult to go out for 2 kilometers to fetch water or firewood. Whenever they go, Khalil says, they are raped, sexually harassed, and assaulted. Alawiya Mukhtar Muhammad, a member of the Darfur Women's Forum, a consortium of women advocacy groups, says the warring parties should ensure that women are protected and are able to access services, including healthcare. She says the fighting has exposed women and children to more vulnerability. Mukhtar says many of the women will be in need of health kits. Some of them might be exposed to rape and sexual assault. She says, we heard about unconfirmed reports of rape cases in recent days, but we are unable to confirm the exact number up to this moment. Mukhtar calls the situation disastrous, noting there is not enough food, drinking water, medicine, or shelter. Women in Karenik lost everything, she says. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Kenya imposes a curfew to remove legal firearms. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what steps should the government take to ensure children are enrolled and stay in school?
I think governments should get more facilities in the schools, like library, and also to get them a playing ground. Because as the child learns, they have to play to release stress.
There has to be a conducive learning atmosphere, which of course we lack in most of our government schools.
Government should provide free educations for the people in the village, as well as in town also.
Government should provide free meals for kids when they go to school. They should also provide good learning environment. They should also provide qualified teachers who would also take care of their children and keep them engaged so they'll be interested in schooling.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The Kenyan government has placed Marsabit County, an area bordering the neighboring Ethiopia, under a 30-day curfew to allow for a crackdown on illegal firearms and ammunition in the region. The Interior Ministry says the move follows frequent attacks by bandits in the region that have left many people dead and others missing. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
General Service Unit officers have been deployed to Marsabit and Isiolo counties to carry out an operation that Kenya's Interior Ministry says will last until normalcy returns. Speaking in Nairobi on Monday, Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i said that the bandits must surrender the illegal firearms to the law enforcement agencies.
We have placed the whole of Marsabit County under curfew. For 30 days, there will be a curfew in place in Marsabit between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. We have in the last 1 week built up, and we continue to build, unprecedented security resources in Marsabit, because we must bring that county under peace, and we must ensure that all illegal firearms and illegal armors there are surrendered to law enforcement agencies. We will stay on this operation until sanity prevails and until we stop the senseless loss of lives in that county.
Intelligence reports from Kenya indicates that there could be illegal activities carried out by the suspected Oromo Liberation Front groups from neighboring Ethiopia in a town called Sololo, a few miles from the border between Kenya and Ethiopia. Matiang'i has declared Kom sublocation in neighboring Isiolo County as a disturbed area that will as well have officers to carry out similar security operations.
What happens here is that there are some illegal mining activities that are going on, and these illegal mining activities seem to be funding and supporting some of the conflicts in Marsabit, and some of it, unfortunately, and I must say candidly here, we think some resources are being channeled to terrorist cells. You may recall that just recently, our security forces intercepted a huge cache of explosives in Meriti. Those explosives were meant for Nairobi. They were being moved by a terrorist cell. And that route has become worrisome to all of us.
The Kenyan government will also monitor any movement to and from the area within that period, and the people must be cleared by security officials. Groups seeking to enter the marked areas to conduct trade will be considered to be armed and dangerous. Security experts say banditry is becoming a major internal security concern across Africa. Political leaders have been asked to cooperate with security agencies to help solve insecurity in the region. Six people, including the area chief and assistant chief, were killed last week in the latest attack in the area as they were pursuing stolen cattle when they were ambushed by the attackers. 13 people are still missing. The counties of Baringo, Turkana, Laikipia, Elgeyo Marakwet, West Pokot, Samburu, Isiolo, and Marsabit are troubled with insecurity following frequent attacks. The banditry incidents are rampant in other African countries such as Nigeria, Uganda, Madagascar, Cameroon, and South Sudan, among others. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
From Kenya, we move to Malawi, where President Lazarus Chikwera has vowed never to persecute anyone for speaking their minds, as he became the first sitting leader to host journalists for World Press Freedom Day. But press freedom activists point to recent arrests for social media posts critical of Chikwera and police pressuring a journalist to reveal sources on government corruption. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera vowed to protect press freedom in comments to journalists who were invited for the first time to the top leader's home for World Press Freedom Day. In the event broadcast on Malawi's state TV, Chakwera said if his administration feels unjustly defamed by media, they will simply lodge a complaint to regulatory agencies or the courts.
But we must never seek to harm those who offend us in this way or try to deprive them of their freedom through illegal searches, seizures, arrests or invasive acts like hacking, harassment, and cyberbullying. These things have no place in a free society, and this is a free country.
Invited press freedom activists welcomed Chakwera's words, but said more actions were needed to prevent journalists from being abused. Teresa Ndanga is the chairwoman of the Media Institute for Southern Africa in Malawi. She told the president that Malawi's politicians and police have harassed, arrested, and attacked journalists without consequence.
We have tried to enlighten the public, approach successive inspector generals of police, secretary generals of political parties on the importance of safeguarding media freedom. But it is sad to say, sir, that nobody has been prosecuted, and there is a spirit of impunity that continues to grow. Your Excellency, we need arrests, we need prosecutions, and people need to know that attacking a journalist is a crime.
Malawi police in April detained investigative journalist Grigory Gondwe, who said they seized his computer and smartphone and tried to pressure him to reveal sources on a government corruption story. Gondwe's detention came just after Malawi's Attorney General Chakacha Nyirenda said he would take action against those who leaked a document used in his story. Gondwe's platform for investigative journalism website was later hacked, raising suspicions about possible police involvement. Social media posts have also come under scrutiny. Malawi's police on Saturday arrested a nurse for insulting Chakwera during a WhatsApp debate on governance. The nurse was charged with cyber harassment and faces up to 5 years in prison if found guilty. The nurse's arrest comes a week after police in the capital, Lilongwe, arrested a 51-year-old man for allegedly insulting the Minister of Labor in his WhatsApp group post. Press freedom activist Ndanga said the government should repeal laws that impinge on media freedom and are used to punish government critics. Chakwera said his administration was working to reform such laws.
Having worked as a legislator myself, I know that the process of changing our laws can be painstaking and cumbersome, but I'm determined to see it done.
Malawi's Minister of Information, Gospel Gazako, also urged journalists to be responsible and committed to professional standards if they want to continue enjoying the country's press freedom. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Kenyan authorities are training domestic workers who accept jobs in Middle East about their rights after years of reported abuse there, including beating, rapes, and deaths. Kenyan authorities say there have been at least 23 such cases since November, most of them in Saudi Arabia. Victoria Munga reports from Nairobi.
It's been a year since Bernard Njenga learned his wife Esther Thuku had died in Saudi Arabia, where she had been a domestic worker for 3 years. Saudi authorities reported his wife had committed suicide at her employer's home. Njenga says he believes the mother of four was murdered. He says his wife's body did not have any mark that would show she had hanged herself because there would be marks around the neck. It appeared the body had been buried because it was very dirty and looked like she had been stabbed on the left side. That wouldn't have been hanging at all, Njenga said. Kenyan authorities say that since November, at least 23 domestic workers have died while working in the Middle East. Most of those deaths occurred in Saudi Arabia, according to labor officials. Saudi authorities have reported that all 23 of those deaths resulted from cardiac arrest. In April 2020, rights advocacy groups Amnesty International reported that Kenyans who have jobs as domestic workers in the Middle East often complain of lack of payment, forced labor, physical abuse, rape, and dangerous working conditions. Now, Kenya is offering safety training for domestic workers who take jobs abroad. Edith Murogo is the director at East Africa Institute of Home Care Management in Nairobi.
When you don't train them, then basically you are exposing them to exploitation and abuse. Part of the training also includes labor rights awareness. They have to know how to bargain and to talk to employers about decent terms and conditions of employment.
These are among 30,000 Kenyans who migrate to the Middle East to find work each year. Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Labor, Simon Chelugui, says they are working with Saudi officials on labor law reforms.
We would want, in case, we would want them to also upscale their laws to protect workers and employer equally, not to discriminate and have the attitude of employees right always. Number two is that the pay is reasonable, commensurate to the work.
VOA reached out to the Saudi embassy in Nairobi for comment on alleged mistreatment and death of Kenyan workers. In an email response, the embassy said the kingdom does not condone illegal and ill treatment of anyone and said Riyadh is working with Nairobi to protect citizens from any offense. Meanwhile, officials say with an estimated 2 million young people graduating each year, according to national figures, and only about 800,000 new jobs, many Kenyans will continue to go abroad to find work. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end the show with Musa Juma and the song New Sudan.
Viva New Sudan. Sudan upia. Upia. Milambo, Abanai personalities, Southern region.
Karangoti yomatek sana Africa. Zimbeo kedo malich sana Africa. Kelijo kedo matek sana Africa. Acholi konda sande kinupi. Shiluku konda madigiti kalukutu. Nyanyali da Joseph Lako, Generali Joseph Lako.
Oscar. Toke de pili Sudani mamilango ele. Equatorial personalities, Southern region. Toke de pili Sudani mamilango ele. All personalities, Southern region.
Daktari, Justin Tiomatek sana. Masani, Kama Tiomatek sana. Wakili, Peter Tiomatek sana. Lukutu, Agnes Tiomatek sana. Malpino, Olivia Tiomatek sana. Anyango kedo malin sana Africa. Anyanyalita Joseph Lako. Generali Joseph Lako.
Nebet. Yoke nepi Sudani mamila mboge. Bargasel personalities Southern region.
We have been listening to Musa Juma and the song New Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Salva e kirtio matek sana. charoti yo matek sana Africa. Anyanyalita Joseph Lako. Generali Joseph Lako.
Sab sab.
Toke de pe Sudan mamela moke.